It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR and at www.wrir.org. I'm your host, Marty Wegbrand.
Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Ain't gonna let nobody.
This show was written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
Well, gerrymandering is about elected officials deciding that they're going to choose their voters rather than allow the voters to choose them. So they draw districts that are meant to assure their re-election or the election of somebody like them. Because the districts have become reliably one party or the other, the nominating processes for those parties have become very extreme. So whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats, the people choosing the nominees are not in the middle. They're at the extremes of the parties. And so you end up with a very bipolar government where compromise is a dirty word and where good governance suffers, I think. And so I think, you know, one of the things that nonpartisan redistricting would bring to the voters is much more competitive elections, a greater reality that they're actually influencing the electoral process and choosing somebody that they want to vote for, and ultimately eliminate that sort of bipolar nature of the government, allowing us to actually come to the middle on some things, where right now we stand at the, you know, extremes and yell at each other.
Claire Gastaniaga, Executive Director of the ACLU of Virginia, talks about the U.S. Supreme Court's recent important decision about redistricting, the problems of redistricting and racial and partisan gerrymandering, and the difficult solutions that are needed. And during this week's News You Can Use, you'll learn about a case where predatory lenders are preying on each other. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. The show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. This show, number 272, is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford an attorney, we'll tell you later in the show how to get free legal advice or representation in a civil case. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and online at www.wrir.org, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR. And now, this week's News You Can Use. Last month, a Fulton County, Georgia judge ordered TitleMax to stop looking for a new business by searching state motor vehicle records for the names of its competitors' customers and entering competitors' stores or parking lots to solicit customers or offering money to competitors' employees in return for referrals. The temporary injunction comes in one of three unfair business practices suits filed by a group of TitleMax competitors in Texas, South Carolina, and Georgia. Select Management, like TitleMax, controls a national network of title lenders. Their Georgia lawsuit accused TitleMax of illegally using Department of Motor Vehicle records in several states. The lawsuit accused TitleMax of violating the federal Driver's Privacy Protection Act by accessing DMV record to solicit and divert current and prospective title loan customers from the plaintiffs. The lawsuit also said TitleMax sends its employees to the plaintiffs' parking lots to offer their customers cash rewards to do business with TitleMax and to record the license plates and vehicle identification numbers of its competitors' customers in order to access their information from DMV records. The complaint also said TitleMax employees have gone into the plaintiff's stores and offered their employees $50 for every customer they referred to TitleMax. In response, TitleMax accused Select Management of illegal behavior and presented an affidavit from a former employee for one of the plaintiffs, claiming he was instructed to visit TitleMax stores and surreptitiously photograph goal boards bearing monthly targets and the actual amounts of loans made. TitleMax also accused the plaintiffs of trademark violations and false advertising. However, the judge granted a motion for a temporary injunction sought by Select Management and found a substantial likelihood the plaintiffs will prevail on the merits of their claim and a substantial threat that the plaintiffs will suffer irreparable injury in the form of lost customers, lost goodwill, and repeated trespass. Under the order, TitleMax and any of its agents are prohibited from searching any state DMV records or other similar database for the purpose of obtaining the identities or contact information of past or present customers of Select Management, or from using such information to solicit their customers. Nor may TitleMax employees enter any of the plaintiff's stores or parking lots to record the license plates or vehicle identification numbers of their customers, solicit their customers on the plaintiff's premises, or offer money or any sort of compensation to the plaintiff's employees in return for referrals. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright. Welcome back to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio. We're here at the headquarters of the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia, and we are speaking with the director, Claire Gastaniaga, and we will be talking about redistricting and eventually the Supreme Court decision from last month, which may put limits on political and partisan redistricting in the United States. Welcome back to the show, Claire.
Oh, well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here. It's been a long time. We should do it more often.
We should. So we'd like to start with redistricting in general, and in particular, the principle of one person, one vote. That was a big case that the ACLU brought decades ago. Tell us about that concept.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is that under our constitutional representative democracy, each person's vote is supposed to count the same as everybody else's. And everyone is entitled to have that vote counted the same as everyone else's.
And so what was the problem before the Supreme Court's redistricting decision decades ago?
What was happening was that the various districts were not being apportioned evenly according to population. And so not every vote counted equally when electing federal officials and members of Congress. And it's not as relevant relative to members of the Senate because they get elected statewide.
But for districts that have to be elected by population, this applies across the board. Am I correct? It's federal, yeah. It's state, it's local, it's everybody.
Yeah, there are two different issues. I mean, there are federal laws that apply to federal elections, and then in Virginia, we have parallel requirements in our Virginia Constitution that talk about how our districts are supposed to be drawn. But the concept of everybody's vote counting the same is true across all elections.
So if everyone's vote is supposed to count the same, can you tell us why we have gerrymandering? First of all, tell us what gerrymandering is.
Well, gerrymandering is about elected officials deciding that they're going to choose their voters rather than allow the voters to choose them. So they draw districts that are meant to assure their reelection or the election of somebody like them. And as we've become more technologically astute and more computer literate, we've gone from redistricting processes that were literally about a bunch of people in a room with a bunch of maps drawing lines on maps to being able to reconfigure districts in seconds by census block. And so what you'll see these days are very refined districts where literally they draw around census blocks to try to capture people, voters, that they think are more likely to be receptive to their party or reelect them if they're incumbents.
And there are various types of gerrymandering. I guess one of them is racial gerrymandering, and we have an example of that right here in Virginia. Can you tell us about that?
in Virginia, certainly, it has been the case over years that African-American voters are more likely to vote Democratic than Republican. And so there's an intersection of race and party that is important in these analyses. But what's happened in the past and what's being challenged now is a practice of devaluing the value of African-American votes or diminishing the influence of African-American voters by doing one of two things, either cracking their communities when it comes to districting or packing African-American voters in as few districts as you can. And so the congressional challenge that's currently pending in the courts in Virginia is about the effort to pack as many African-American voters into the 3rd congressional district as possible in order to protect the incumbent in the 4th congressional district, where a lot of those voters might more reasonably be drawn, than putting that person in a position where African-American voters could have a very important influence on their election or not re-election.
And by the 3rd congressional district, we're talking about the district of Congressman Bobby Scott, which, if you look at it on a map, looks utterly crazy. It basically sort of hugs the James River, and you can't even drive from one section of it to another section of it without going through other districts. How could that district possibly be legal?
Well, you know, in theory, these are supposed to be compact and contiguous districts that pay attention to communities of interest. I mean, I live in Bobby Scott's district, and I live in the city of Richmond near Maymont, and I have friends in Ghent and Norfolk who also live in Bobby Scott's district. And it really runs down I-64, where there are no houses and no people. So it's contiguous because it's linked together by a geographical highway, literally, but it's certainly not compact. And it's been drawn, as I said, to pack as many African-American voters in one district as possible.
So is that district going to be redrawn as a result of the court's decision? Where does that stand right now?
The initial finding was that it was unconstitutional and it was racially discriminatory districting, and that's a decision of a 3-judge panel that goes directly to the United States Supreme Court. And we're now in a situation where, you know, people are trying to decide whether to wait and allow the court to draw new districts or to convene the legislature and have the legislature give a go at it.
So you mentioned that districts have to be contiguous and compact,
yeah,
and have to include communities of interest. Where do those requirements come from?
Well, those requirements come out of the Virginia State Constitution, among other things. And, you know, those are the kinds of issues that have been brought up both back in the 2001 redistricting cycle, where some people sued challenging the Virginia legislative districts and successfully won a district court decision that then went up to the Virginia Supreme Court, where they unfortunately decided that they thought that something was fit the constitutional standards when it was literally joined only by uninhabited water. And so the Virginia Supreme Court's kind of made a mockery of the compact and contiguous requirements. But that doesn't mean somebody can't go back and ask them to revisit those issues. There is now, in addition to the challenge to the federal congressional districts, there is a challenge to the state legislative districts that is very similar and also deals with cracking and packing, where black communities of interest are split up in order to devalue their influence in any particular district. And in other circumstances, African-American voters are packed into a single district in order to limit their ability to influence other districts. You know, back in the 80s, in Virginia, in another redistricting case that had to do with a move to single-member districts from multi-member districts, guys ran 3 years in a row. They ran in the multi-member districts, then there was a court decision, and they ran in different districts, and then there was another decision, and they ran in a third set of districts. And so sometimes these things have a tendency to be a little bit complicated over a period of years before the politics and the legal stuff all get sorted out. The Voting Rights Act goes to the question whether you've taken action that's meant to devalue the political and electoral influence of minority voters. And the challenge was to a few of the districts, not the whole picture. But if you challenge a few of the districts and you need to change those, there's a domino effect. So it means that you have to change all of the districts, or substantially all of the districts, if you change these few. And the arguments made in that case were that the districts were drawn in a way that was purposefully meant to minimize the influence of African-American voters or to make it more difficult for them to elect the person of their choice.
So what about political gerrymandering as opposed to racial gerrymandering? I mean, I have seen congressional district maps, not necessarily in Virginia, but in places like Illinois or Florida, where the district itself is a city block or two wide, and it's done that way to link two areas that would be, let's say, heavily Republican or heavily Democratic. And again, as you pointed out, packing and cracking the voting blocks, not of racial minorities, but of political minorities.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there is a potential for partisan districting to go to an extreme that results in, I think, an equal violation of one person, one vote, and essentially substitutes the legislative judgment of who their voters should be for the judgment of the voters for who their electeds should be. Unfortunately, the courts have yet to recognize a real cause of action to challenge that. And there was sort of a throwaway line and dicta in one case that suggested that somebody could make that case. But the problem with all of these cases now that we've gotten the Supreme Court blew a hole in preclearance on the Voting Rights Act and the ability to look at things that adversely impacted minority voters before the election took place, we're now in a situation in which all of these challenges are left to challenges that occur after the election, where you take the evidence of the election and make the case backwards. And so on the partisan redistricting line, nobody's been able ever to do the research and to put together a compelling case that would meet the standard, which is that it violates one person, one vote.
Which brings us to the recently decided U.S. Supreme Court case from last month, which upheld a nonpartisan commission to do the redistricting. Tell us about that case and what hope, if any, it brings to a more rational system of of districting.
Well, I mean, it was a narrow legal question, and the narrow legal question was the federal constitutional provision on apportionment speaks about the legislature taking action, and the issue raised in the Arizona case was when the legislature approved initiative and referendum and when the voters went out and decided that they wanted a nonpartisan redistricting commission, were the voters the legislature or not in that circumstance? And we consider them the legislature for things like, you know, whether it's direct or grassroots lobbying under federal tax laws. And so I don't think it was a stretch for the court to decide that in that circumstance, the voters were acting as the legislature. And so they did not overturn. I mean, it was the legislators themselves challenging the redistricting commission because they were losing the power to decide, you know, who would elect them. And so the bad news for Virginia is we don't have an issue of referendum, and the exact holding in the case doesn't matter for us. But the good news for us is that it was a recognition that the legislature can, in fact, delegate to the people the ability to be the legislature for this point of, you know, for making these kinds of decisions. And so it gives additional momentum, or certainly doesn't stop the momentum, for those people who are trying very hard now to convince the legislature to adopt a nonpartisan redistricting commission approach in Virginia, either constitutionally, which would require the legislature to approve it twice and then put it on the ballot for the people to approve.
And what is the likelihood of that happening in Virginia, especially given all of these court challenges that have been filed and have been successful, at least on the racial gerrymandering?
Yeah, right now there's a partisan divide, a significant partisan divide. There's one party that says absolutely that they don't think the system's broken and they're not interested in fixing it. And there's another party, which is currently out of power, that's saying, you know, we think the system is broken and it would be a good thing to fix it. And there are incumbents on both sides of the aisle, frankly, who think the current system is fine because it's about doing the deal to protect your own you know, self when it comes time to having a district that will reelect you. So I'm not pessimistic, but I'm not optimistic. And I think it's really about your listeners and other people in Virginia, voters, making this an important issue and saying to people who are running for reelection this fall, we want you to fix the system. But right now, the perception is the voters don't care about it. And so nothing's going to happen until that changes.
And why is it, in your view, that voters don't care about it? Because when you look at elections, I mean, so many of them, especially in Virginia, are uncontested because the districts have been drawn so lopsidedly partisan that, in a heavily Democratic district, no Republican has a chance. In a heavily Republican district, no Democrat has a chance. And these districts, even though they're supposed to be, according to the Constitution, compact, contiguous, and have communities of interest, in fact, don't. And the Supreme Court of Virginia doesn't seem to care.
Yeah, it's really sad. I mean, I think it's even worse than that. Because the districts have become reliably one party or the other, the nominating processes for those parties have become very extreme. So whether it's the Republicans or the Democrats, the people choosing the nominees are not in the middle. They're at the extremes of the parties. And so you end up with a very bipolar government where compromise is a dirty word and where good governance suffers, I think. And so I think, you know, one of the things that nonpartisan redistricting would bring to the voters is much more competitive elections, a greater reality that they're actually influencing the electoral process and choosing somebody that they want to vote for, and ultimately eliminate that sort of bipolar nature of the government, allowing us to actually come to the middle on some things, where right now we stand at the, you know, extremes and yell at each other.
And it seems this really goes to the heart of democracy, which is why I began with one person, one vote. And that's supposed to be the constitutional ideal. And people's votes are not supposed to be diluted. And yet we see it happening all the time, not only in Virginia, but all across the country.
Yeah. And, you know, in Virginia, this is part of a constellation of things that are done to keep people from voting. So if you district in a way that makes the elections non-competitive, nobody has a reason to show up, so you can kind of turn out your four friends and get elected. We also, as you know, have the Jim Crow era prohibition on voting after being convicted of a felony, and that has 400,000 plus people who can't vote. And now we have an ID requirement that bears no relationship to any kind of evidence of fraud that is merely a barrier. And we have excuse absentee voting, which requires you to have some kind of excuse in order to vote absentee instead of allowing anybody to vote absentee who wants to. So, you know, Virginia has a long history of trying to close the door to the ballot box. And these kinds of partisan and racial districting is just one aspect of that.
And we'll probably be back on the radio in late October before the November general election to explain all of that to people who do want to vote and want to minimize the hassle of the polls.
Well, I think it's just really, I mean, we're concerned, I mean, on the absentee voting part, we're concerned about the privacy issues. I mean, where you're required to tell people that you're going to be out of town and that you have a disability and all these different things that the registrars then put in a file folder somewhere. It has no privacy or security protections. And we don't really think the government ought to be collecting that information in this kind of circumstance. And we've made some minor revisions to that, but there's still gaping, you know, opportunities for all kind of adverse consequences for voters because the way we currently administer that excuse absentee voting system. You know, if we had no excuse, you'd just go down to the registrar and say, I want to vote absentee. They'd say yes, and that'd be the end of it. And if you really wanted people to vote, that's what you'd do.
And it seems that at least some folks don't want people to vote.
There does seem to be a belief system that we should control the voting populace. We should narrow it to the people that we want to vote, and we should put in place laws and districts that assure that that's what's going to happen.
Well, thank you very much. We have been speaking with Claire Gustin-Yaga. She is the director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Virginia. We've been talking about redistricting and how it can poison voting rights for ordinary Americans. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Marty. Look forward to doing it again soon.
Turn me around, no, turn me around, ain't gonna let
that's all for this week's Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. To see if you can get free civil legal aid, call during intake hours. These are Monday through Thursday, 9 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. and 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. The phone number is 200-6046 for intake, 648-1012 for the main number, and 1-800-868-1012 to call toll-free. You can get free legal information at the statewide legal aid website. This is www.valegalaid.org. You also may get free pre-recorded legal information by phone during non-business hours. These are before 9 a.m., after 5 p.m., and on weekends and legal holidays. Call toll-free 1-866-534-5243. If you have any comments on the show, you can email them to marty@cvlas.org. In addition, every first-run Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio show ever broadcast is available at www.radioforall.net. That's radio, the numeral 4, all.net. Then click the contributor link, then click Marty Wegbright, Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. This show provides only general legal information. If you have a legal problem and need specific legal advice about your situation, contact an attorney. If you can't afford one, call Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Last month, the U.S. Supreme Court made another important decision about fair housing. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when Helen Hardiman, Director of Fair Housing at Housing Opportunities Made Equal, discusses how housing discrimination can be proved by disparate impact and why that is so important. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Wegbright.